This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. And I am broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs, as always. It's very cold. It's very windy. I think that winter, feels like winter rather than just fall. I'm really glad that you join me today at republicbroadcasting.org. I also ask that you visit and subscribe to SpingolaSpeaks.net and ScreeningSandyHook.net. I repeat this just about every week. Well, no, every week. I tell everyone how they can visit the chat room. I tell everyone how you can visit my website so that you can see the radio schedule. And when you look at the radio schedule, it's a button on my website. My website is spingola.com. S-P-I-N-G-O-L-A. Spingola.com. On the left-hand side of the page, you will see a button that says Radio Schedule Button. You click that button, and you will see all of the guests that I have ever had on the program for the last 10 years. I celebrate my 10th anniversary with Republic on the 23rd of this month. And so you can see everyone that I've ever had on the program. You can see links to their website. You can see links to relevant topics that they have discussed. You can visit their websites. You can interact with them, email them, or whatever. So that's all you have to do is visit spingola.com and click on that radio schedule button on the left-hand side of the page. I have also names of the future guests that I'm going to have. As soon as I schedule someone for a program, I put their name there. I put their name in the schedule so that you can anticipate who you would like to listen to, and hopefully it's everybody that I schedule, because I schedule some of the greatest guests. I have interviewed so many wonderful people on a variety of topics, and so they're there. All the information is there. And today I have a guest that I haven't had on for a while. I have no idea why. She's just fabulous. She's full of information. She's bright, intelligent, informative. Her name is Vicki Davis. She has two websites that are very, very interesting. They are channelingreality.com and The Technocratic Tyranny. And this is particularly interesting because of what's going on. Today, this week, even more than last week, it just seems like it's just exploding. Vicki, welcome to the program.
Hi, Deanna. Thank you very much for this very kind introduction.
Well, it's well deserved. I'm not making stuff up. You're exactly as I stated. You're terrific.
Well, thank you. I try. I'm doing my best to really understand what is going on in the world, you know, and that's kind of how it got started as a kind of personal journey, and it just expanded, mushroomed out to a nightmare world that we see today.
I know. That's how we all started questioning at some point in time about what the heck was going on, and it just kept getting worse. And you think, how much how much worse could it get now with this COVID thing? Which is extremely interesting. Unbelievable. We have no flu deaths this year though. Isn't that terrific? All the flu deaths.
What a coincidence.
So COVID was the answer for the flu deaths. That's fabulous.
Uh-huh. Yeah, COVID is pretty convenient for the beginning of implementation of the totalitarian management system, isn't it?
Yes, it sure is.
Where they control everything, you know, to tell you what you can do, what you can't do. And conveniently, the people that are in charge are not elected people. They're public health people.
Right.
And so there's really no way to get at them to get them out of office because they're not in office.
And the people who are in office do not have the guts to get rid of them. Or they were put into office because they don't have the guts to get rid of them.
Yeah. Well, if you look at Idaho, as an example, the biggest part of Idaho's budget are the social programs, you know, the federal government funding social programs. And Idaho is divided up into 7 public health districts, and it's the health districts that actually use that money for the social service programs. So right through that system, they have a built-in constituency for the socialist programs. And the politicians, of course, they want that money coming into the state. So it's like they used this unelected system of public health officials to, in a backdoor way, buy off our elected officials.
Right. And I it didn't happen overnight, with the Affordable Health Care Act, with all the things that have happened. Well, basically since Medicare.
Yes.
And when people think, oh, this is wonderful. The government is going to help us do this or pay for this. And it used to be that when doctors, you had interaction with your doctor, was one-on-one. The healthcare costs have risen 1,000 times. And now all of a sudden the government is in charge of your body. And with the Affordable Health Care Act, they actually own your body. And people don't understand that. They think, oh, what a wonderful thing that we are. They think that they're entitled to health care when, in fact, they're not. The government is entitled to tell you what you can do or to force you into doing things that you would never have thought of doing before.
Yeah, and in the legislation that passed, the idea was to have a health care manager that will direct your health care, you know, what health care you get. And what you don't get. Now they use the example of a senior citizen and, you know, you can kind of see that because senior citizens, they see all different kinds of doctors and they have, you know, a lot of them have half a dozen different kinds of medications. And, so perhaps they need a healthcare manager, but actually I do believe that the idea was to have the healthcare manager manage everybody's healthcare,
right.
And in that way they can direct you to specific locations, you know, for the healthcare that you would get. There's a lot of things that you can do with a system the way that they've designed it that. And some of them, in my opinion, the one that I saw is a crime against humanity. But, there's a lot of things that you can do with a system like that. Like you can, if the society, if they decide that a person is worth saving, they can route that person to a good doctor. If they think that person is not worth saving, they route it to another doctor who might actually be a Dr. Kevorkian or something.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, things are not really what they seem to be with the Affordable Care Act. And they haven't been, you know, from the beginning, like their focus on wellness. Think about the logic of this. In that legislation, they were focusing on wellness rather than on sickness.
Right.
Well, people that are well, they don't need the healthcare system. It's the sick people that need the healthcare system. So it's like they flipped everything upside down. Nothing makes sense. I mean, why would you have a healthcare system for healthy people? Doesn't compute.
Right.
So, right. But it seems like that everything, just about everything that's going on in this country is, flipping things upside down. In such a way that instead of a revolution, they're really having a devolution. Breaking apart the nation state system, breaking apart our system of government. And I think actually they are trying to break it all the way down to start over from a system of like the Roman city state, you know,
right.
a system of independent jurisdictions that are all connected to the global system, because a major factor in it is, of course, technology and what you can do with technology.
Right.
And so, you know, for the internationalists, I have no doubt whatsoever that they consider the national government to be redundant.
Right.
You know, from their point of view, why do you need a national government when we're up here and we can have uniform policies for the entire world, the world
right.
over.
A global government, a one world order.
Yeah. And the fact that every jurisdiction, even within countries, every jurisdiction is different, makes no difference to them. Because the idea is totalitarian control from the international level down to the ground.
Mm.
So I'm sure you've had, I don't know if you've had Charlotte Iserbide on, but I'm sure you've had people on.
I have. It's been a long time.
Yeah. I'm sure you've had people on that talked about outcome-based education.
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
Yeah.
We've talked about Common Core and all of that. It's just the change in education from when I went to school,
yeah.
which has been quite some time. It's just totally different. People are not learning the same things. They're not concentrating on the basic education. And then you also have within the classrooms, you have teachers who are saying, oh, this young man he has a problem. He's overactive. So you have a lot of children who are on medications that are destroying them, that are really setting them up to go on even more medications later on. It's terrible. And we've become a medicalized nation.
Yes.
Which can go off on another track altogether, which also has to do with healthcare. That this healthcare situation or health management or sickness management it's like a tarantula that's got its tentacles in everywhere. Whether you're talking school, whether you're talking anywhere, it's just terrible. Anything that the government licenses, they can control.
Yes. And if you lose your license, then you lose your ability to make a living. So it's kind of like a chain.
Right.
If they license you, it's a chain on you.
Right. Exactly. And everything is licensed. And so, for instance, with this COVID nonsense, if you do not require a mask, or if you change or alter in any way, they can take your license away. And, uh-huh. and so they really have people really, it's terrible. But when you think of all the people that need licenses, and not just hospitals, nursing homes, memory care facilities, we're talking, well, doctors are licensed, nurses are licensed, restaurants are licensed. Everybody has to have a license. You have to have a license to drive. You have to have a license to get married. It didn't used to be that way.
Yeah, government permission.
Right, and we've incrementally accepted these.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, when they implemented those licensing programs, there was a good reason to do it. I don't think anybody ever conceived of a time when they would use that in the way that it's been used, which is for extortion purposes, either accept our totalitarian system based on BS, mm-hmm. or you won't be able to make a living.
Right.
So, you know, because, and I say that because I don't disagree with licenses in a lot of areas, like physicians, like barbers and beauty shops, and anything that has to do with food or sanitation, or if they can really hurt you, you know, like you wouldn't want the local butcher standing in for a surgeon.
Which they
I mean, he might
do.
Be a good cutter, but I don't think you want him cutting on your body.
But it used to be that the barber was also a surgeon, you know, so I don't know. It just seems like if you accept a little bit of something, like, oh, let's license a doctor, then all of a sudden it's incremental, and pretty soon everybody has a license to live.
Uh-huh.
If you're not obedient, then, well, there goes your livelihood. And especially, well, in the healthcare situation, healthcare industry or sickness care industry, that was all altered, years ago, by Rockefeller. And, before that, there were all kinds of traditional real healthcare situations, but that was altered, and that's when things started to change, where people had to get a license, and only certain medical schools were approved, and this was with the report. What's the name of that report? Abraham. Somebody did this report. It was paid for by the Carnegie Institution.
Uh-huh.
And then, all of a sudden, things changed. And,
yeah. Well, that's when they started using chemistry to mix up concoctions. And,
right.
And it makes sense that it would be a Rockefeller that did that, because he was a snake oil salesman.
Exactly. Yes. That's what he was.
Yeah, but, you know, and what they've done with the medical profession is to bring in a lot of Latin and Greek words. And I was talking to a doctor one time, and it was about, I can't remember what the ailment was, but if it occurred in one section of the body, they called it one thing, but if it occurred the same illness, the same problem, if it occurred in a different part of the body, they called it something different. And that to me seems like really fraudulent. You know, if you call it one thing for one part of the body, it should be the same thing in another part, right?
Exactly. Alrighty, we are going on a break. We will be right back, so stay with us.
starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good.
All righty, we are back. Our guest today is Vicki Davis. Her websites are channelingreality.com and The Technocratic Tyranny. We're talking about licenses and medical care and I was, the Flexner Report, which the Carnegie Institute paid for, altered everything. And before that, there were other modalities, medical modalities that had been in place for thousands of years. I'm a big, Deepak, Chopra fan. And, he said that when he first went to medical school, he said that they taught some very interesting things, as if the body is a machine that's assembled from moving parts and that it wears out over time. And that, oh, one thing that he said the body, or what they said, what allopathic medical school said or claimed, is that the body is at constant risk for contamination and disease. A hostile environment teems with invading germs and viruses waiting to overwhelm the body's immune defenses. And he was just, he looked at this and tried to figure it out, and he said, what about the spiritual part of humanity? What about hopes, emotions, aspirations, love, and suffering? Machines don't lead such lives. And a group of organs, a collection of organs, don't lead such lives. There is more. There's a more meaningful life if you look at the body holistically, which is what traditional medicine did. And then allopathic medicine came along with what you said before we went to the break, with their chemicals from the snake oil salesman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they basically dehumanized everything in the society today since they moved into the technological era. Actually, before that, maybe. I'm not sure when that Flexner report was written.
1910.
Okay, well, that was like at the beginning or middle right. of the industrial era, right?
Right.
And so they began looking at everything as if it was a machine.
Right.
And you know, with machines and with assembly line processes, division of labor, it really, that is a they dehumanized humans, and things have been getting progressively worse ever since. Right. And I've started calling this era that we're in now the post-human era, because as they design more and more systems to control every aspect of our lives, they are dehumanizing. They're programming our lives, you know, the schedule and the, they're programming the schedule of your life. Now we're a little bit too old for it, but for the children that are born today, their lives will be totally programmed.
Right.
And managed.
Exactly.
And it's by, you could say by algorithm. I really don't like saying by algorithm or using the term artificial intelligence, so, because what they have are programs that they analyze things statistically and then you know, produce reports with the results, and depending upon that analysis is where they are going to put you, you know, for your career, or, you know, make the decisions for you. So I guess you could call it artificial intelligence, but I don't like calling it that, because it's anything that runs on a computer is a program. A programmer wrote it. It's code. And a programmer can change it. So there's no the only intelligence really is in the programmer who wrote it.
Right. Right. Let me just share an email that just came in. The actual or original meaning of the word license is not merely permission, but permission to do something illegal, thanks to Clint Richardson. Remember the tagline for Bond movies, 007, License to Kill. Now, I don't think that I wouldn't wholly accept that, because getting married is certainly not illegal, but if you license something that people were ordinarily doing to begin with, well, it's just kind of strange. Okay, we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good.
All righty, we are back with our guest, Vicki Davis. Her websites are channelingreality.com and The Technocratic Tyranny. And it's just, that is so true, what is going on. And it just seems that there are a lot of people who are awake to this, that even understand or can see the COVID situation as a scam. And yet there are people who are really believing that this is occurring. I just can't imagine. I can't believe that there are so many people who buy into this.
Yeah, I know. I have a friend who's compiling a report on the statistics, the reporting. And she's gathered articles from all around the country, and there is no consistency in the data that they are collecting. If you have, you know, from one hospital to the next hospital to the next hospital, and they are all defining a case differently, then your report has no, your report is garbage.
Right.
Because they're not all reporting the same thing.
And the hospitals get money, what is it, $13,000, if they report, if somebody got run over by a car, they report it as a COVID death, the hospital makes money, $13,000. And then you have the New York situation, where I believe what was going on there is, because the states have to pay Medicaid. They have to pay a large proportion of that charge. And I believe that in order to cut back on their cash flow, or to increase their cash flow, or to get out of debt, I believe that the governor there actually, caused the death of a lot of the elderly people.
Yeah, by moving COVID patients into the nursing homes.
Yes. Where they're not prepared and unprepared for anything like that. Because when you're in a nursing home or a memory care situation, if you have something wrong, if you have bladder infection or anything like that, you are sent out to the hospital. Because a nursing home, they just have a facility doctor and some attendants, but they're equipped to take care of somebody that is ill.
Yeah, and when you have an illness that is flu-like, they don't want to call it the flu, but it's flu-like, you put people like that into a senior care center, you're absolutely, you're killing people. You're murdering people is what
exactly.
It is, because they are the most vulnerable
right.
in terms of, you know, catching things like that. So, yeah, I consider what Andrew Cuomo did a crime against humanity.
Oh, I do too. Mm-hmm. I do too. Absolutely.
Yeah. If you kill 30,000 people, that's a crime against humanity.
It is.
But what is it that the government is really paying them for? They're paying them. It's bribery to keep the scam going is what it is.
Right.
And in the reports where they are reporting the statistics, the number of cases, they don't have a way to report if a person tests negative and positive this time and then negative the next time and then positive the next time. There's no way to differentiate.
Right.
And they don't keep track of what test it is that is being reported on. So if you have, you know, three hospitals using this one test by this one manufacturer and these other hospitals are using a different test, your statistics aren't valid because you're not reporting the same thing. So the whole thing is a fraud. It's just a fraud. And so, you know, when somebody is instituting a fraud as massive as this, there has to be another objective, right?
Sure. Especially because it's worldwide.
Yes. And so, so what is the major fraud? Well, I agree with a lot of people that it is the World Economic Forum's Great Reset.
Right.
I think it's the time when they are resetting the economic basis of the world. You know, I've thought for a long time, I wrote in about 2009 that they were changing the economic basis such that they would make a system of value based on energy inputs. You know, how much energy goes into something. At this point, I don't think that's quite right. The idea I got from my research, I do believe is right. That they are changing the basis of valuation, flipping it. And the reason why they're doing that is because of the, I'll just say Agenda 21 because everybody knows what Agenda 21 is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's based on the idea that the resources of the world are finite. So if the world's economic system is based on the use of resources, then you are incentivizing the use of those resources that are finite. So they were trying to flip that over on its head, in such a way that the use of resources is not penalized, but becomes very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So if you, but that, you know, that turns everything on its head. And it's what I was saying about devolution. If you are returning to a system whereby manpower is the source of value, by definition, what you are doing is reversing the clock of history. I don't know how you'd say it, but you know, you're just sending us back in time to a primitive and earlier era. Now, how many people are going to die doing that? I would say a lot.
Right. A lot of people are going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are going to die. The value of a nation, or the productivity, or the richness, the wealth of a nation is based on the productivity of its people. And you're saying that there's only a limited amount of resources. And right after the Civil War, very soon after the Civil War, the corporations really took on the privileges or the rights of individuals. And so corporations were given the ability to do many, so we became a corporatocracy or a corporation. The nation became a corporation. We're not a country, we're a corporation. And the current CEO is Donald Trump. And so everything is being run not as a nation of people, of individuals, but as a corporation that takes advantage of every individual in that company, in that corporation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, but I would put it a little differently.
Okay.
In how it evolved. From what I saw, it looked to me as if they are trying to separate the economy from the political system, with the political system being, of course, the system that interacts with people.
Mm-hmm.
The concept of citizenship, elections, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
What they tried to do with these trade agreements is to separate. Now, and when I say trade agreements, I really shouldn't say trade agreements, but I mean with the international system of trade, because it started, of course, before the 1960s when they started with these trade agreements.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, to harmonize and to build the international system. But it seemed to me that what the objective was to separate economic activity from the political system of a country, which when you think about it, it makes no sense at all, because a country, a political system, can't function without money, without production, without, you know, what you do when what they did is to turn the government into just nothing but a personnel management system, and only concerned with health, education, and welfare and incarceration. Like one governor, I think it was from Montana, educate, medicate, and incarcerate.
Wow.
If I'd have been in that office, I probably would have, I would have wanted to punch him in the face.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so, but, and the reason why I say that, it goes back to World War II, the post-World War II period, and the rebuilding of Europe. You know, they...
Which was a big scam.
It was a big scam. And there's one speech that... And I found this. I've been... It's so interesting to me, you know, what I find, because I start out with, you know, researching one thing, and that one, I'll read something, and that will refer me back to something older. And so I've worked my way back to Winston Churchill.
Oh, and my least favorite people.
Yeah, well, and with good reason, and I'm quickly coming on to that opinion. He was the first Lord of the Admiralty, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he...
At the same time as FDR was the first, held that position in this country. They worked together for a very long time.
Was FDR an admiral in the Navy?
No.
Was he a leader of the Port Authority of New York?
No. But he was in the same position. Churchill was in charge of the, well, he wasn't, He wasn't on a ship. He wasn't leading anything, but he was in charge of naval operations, which is the same position that FDR was here in this country. And so they knew each other for a very long time, before World War II.
Okay. All right. Well,
they're both skunks.
Yeah, they are.
Well, no, they're both really awful people. I had a skunk when I was a child, and they're very, very sweet, pleasant little animals. So I don't want to call him a skunk. He was deodorized, so he didn't know he was, but he was. But anyway, that's another topic altogether.
It was FDR and Winston Churchill, of course, who came up with the idea. They signed the Atlantic Charter to create the UN. But Winston Churchill gave a really interesting speech, and it was on March 21st, 1943. It was to the British Parliament, and it was kind of like a State of the Union speech. Mm-hmm. And in that speech, he mentioned creating a Council of Europe.
Mm.
Well, if you go look at the Council of Europe website and look at their history, it was that organization where the concept of trade, international trade, was born. And it started out with the Coal and Steel Treaty with the idea of creating a United States of Europe. And so, first of all, they had to conjoin integrating the governments of the European nation states into a single entity. And they established a regional organization, the European Commission. But the Council of Europe, with its origins in the idea of creating a community / market, you know, as being separate from the political entities, the political nation state system that had been established by the Westphalian Treaty. And so that's where that idea originated, and it was in 1943 when Winston Churchill proposed that to the British Parliament. He also talked about what were they going to do after the war for an income. And Churchill talked about insurance, social insurance. And the law of averages and all of that. And interestingly enough, could be a coincidence, I don't know, but it was in, I think, 1946 when the Social Security system in its current form was established.
Hmm.
And so, you know, Churchill's over there in 1943 talking about, you know, pooling the money of all the people for a social insurance system. And coincidentally, that's what FDR did here. So, or I don't know if FDR, I think it was FDR that did that. If not, it was in the works, in the planning, moving from a system of old age care for widows and children to the modern day Social Security system. So it makes me wonder, you know, where did all that money go? Was that the money that they used for the Marshall Plan? I don't know, but it's an interesting thought that somebody should probably research sometime.
Right. Well, the Marshall Plan was really a kind of an amazing thing. It's the same thing that happened with Iraq, where you go in and you destroy a country or several countries, and then you offer the country loans to rebuild their country, high price loans to rebuild the country, and then they're in debt to you, And oftentimes, the people that are supposed to be rebuilding never rebuild, which occurred in Iraq and in several European countries after World War II, that they just, you know, they took out loans or they became indebted to rebuild their country after the Allies destroyed them. It's quite a situation, quite a way to earn money. Destroying countries, destroying people, murdering people, citizens, innocent children.
I think that's the British method of empire.
It always had been. In India, early on in the 1700s, they were starving people. So there's always a way of getting rid of people simply because they can. Because they, well, that's what they did. They starved people. The Holodomor, starvation under Stalin. This was deliberate. And I do believe, gosh, I hate to even think of it, but with this COVID nonsense, a lot of crops have been plowed under, a lot of cows have been destroyed, a lot of chickens, pigs have been destroyed because the people were not there to process food. And because, oh, they had COVID, so they couldn't work side by side doing what they usually do. We are going to face some hunger in the near future. Uh-huh. I do believe that.
Yeah. I think it's the implementation of the British system.
Yes.
There are other things, too, that I found a speech given by Alan Greenspan. It was probably one of the most interesting speeches that I've heard because you don't, at least, you know, when I used to listen to Greenspan, he rarely ever talked about his thoughts and things that he discovered. Usually it was just all about the Fed, you know, and whatever. Mm-hmm. But in this particular event where he was speaking, he talked about Winston Churchill's speech, the one that's called the Iron Curtain speech, the sinews of, what is it, the sinews of something or other. Anyway, it's called the Iron Curtain speech. I have it on my website. I have a link to it on my website. He was talking about what Winston Churchill said in that speech. And he said when he went to school for economics, he had never heard of the market state or market economics. Mm. And he adopted the ideology of the market state, which basically is lowering our borders and letting foreigners come in and arbitrage, you know, our economy, essentially. But that was from an idea of Winston Churchill, and it dates back to the end of the Cold War when they divided Western Europe from Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union. And he called it a big sociological experiment or a big economic experiment between the Western system of economics and the Eastern system of economics. The authoritarian system versus the alleged, you know, Western tradition of individualism and individual incentive and so forth, which I thought was really, really interesting, a really interesting concept that they would zone off, divide Europe in half for a big economic experiment. And, you know, in continuing to research, I found out that we were cooperating with the Soviets up through 1953, yeah. The Atoms for Peace program.
Right, and Lend-Lease and all that other stuff. They would never have succeeded in any way, shape, or form during World War II without American aid. And then after the war, all of a sudden, there was the Cold War, which was also, fake.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think it was. And I do think it was a big experiment, so that you could play off one side against the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a TED Talk given by a British, I think the guy had been British Foreign Secretary or something in the British government. And he said, Britain always plays the middle role, always.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always a triangulation going on. And Britain always seems to be the puppet master of the game.
Mm-hmm. So, although in 1897, they made a deal with the U.S. that any kind of assets or resources that they stole or acquired from their warfare would be split with the U.S. So the U.S. and Britain are kind of buddies. Buddies in blood. Okay, we're up at the top of the hour break. We'll be right back.
To the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Vicki Davis. Her websites are channelingreality.com and thetechnocratictyranny.com. And anyway, we're talking about people who like to kill other people or who make money by killing other people. Kind of like Cuomo and somebody in the chat room mentioned that they actually started in Britain. Let me just read this. They sent infected people into the old age care homes here in the UK weeks before they did it in America, and they've probably done it in other countries too. They've been following the same format all around the world. They seem to have learned nothing from history. It's very much like when they traded infected blankets with the Native Americans and the Native South Africans to wipe them out. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting. I didn't know they were doing that in Britain. Yeah, they're following the same game plan. And I have found so many parallels in the things that I've researched that it's undeniable that they are moving to a system of global governance. In fact, I found it on the G7 in the G7 history of the things that they agreed to. They, in 1993, they had a meeting in Naples, Italy, of the leaders, and they agreed to, no, it must have been 94, and they agreed to a ministerial meeting that would meet in 95 after they had worked together and came up with a plan for global pilot systems. And I have that on my website. There were 11 pilot systems that they agreed to build. Now, when I say pilot system, I don't mean that they built a small one and then threw it away. A pilot system is the beginning system. It builds the core of whatever system will ultimately be built as they expand it out over time. Okay, so they agreed to these 11 systems that are, I'll tell you what they are in just a second here. A global inventory project, keeping track of all of the global systems that they were developing. That's kind of an administrative task to keep organization to the different systems that would be developed. There was the global interoperability for broadband speed networks, which is, of course, the Internet. Cross-cultural education and training, that was another one, and we know they have that. Electronic libraries that are connected in a global universal system. Electronic museums, galleries, environmental and natural resource management, Global Emergency Management Information Network Initiative, Gemini. That's Gemini.
Mm.
And the Global Healthcare Applications. That's telehealth. And medicine by internet.
Right.
Yep. And theme 9 is government online. And if you look at countries, it makes me laugh. You know, you look at a country like Bangladesh. I remember when the people in Bangladesh were starving, you know, living in dirt mud huts. And,
right.
And now all of a sudden they have this high-priced website and it's totally modern. Well, that's because the global system, What the military industrial complex has been tasked to do, and with NATO's participation, is do a build out of the internet.
Oh, right.
Global system.
It's the same as when they wanted everybody to have a high definition television, and when they wanted everybody to have a cell phone. Is that the same? Same
yes.
kind of situation?
Well, yes, it's all part of the electronic network, the electronic connection, the umbilical cord to the internet.
Right.
So and the last one is the global marketplace for small and medium-sized businesses. Oh, no, here's the last one. Maritime information systems. And under the category of maritime systems, that's where you get China. It's easier to refer to China's Belt and Road Initiative, but it's really not China's initiative, even though China gave a name to it. They were building it in this country, and that was when I actually started researching it and documented, and we exposed the fact that China was investing in these hubs, transportation hubs, which corresponds to the idea of the city-state, connecting a city to the global economy, right? To the global marketplace, I should say.
Uh-huh.
So it's right there in the G7 documentation.
most people are so busy, or we're really busy, before COVID, people don't research. People don't know how to research, which I find really very interesting. They just pay attention to what the news tells them, and they go along with that. And also another thing that's been happening with this COVID situation is that a lot of people aren't working. They're not working by choice because the government is giving them money, and so they are staying home. Now, I've had a situation where I'm having some work done around the house, outside work. I had a new driveway put in and some other things. And the contractor says, I'm having a difficult time getting people to work. He says people are satisfied just to stay home. And I think, how odd, how ridiculous. People really feel good about themselves when they're working, right? When you're active, when you're productive, but to sort of not force people, but allow people, encourage people to be lazy, it seems pretty awful to me.
Yeah. Well, the plan, of course, is to implement universal basic income.
Sure.
And then anything that people want to earn on top of that is okay. You know, the reason I think why, and this was planned out. I have a scans report where they showed the planned composition of the U.S. economy, and they planned for the U.S. economy to be primarily the what they call the innovation economy, high tech, in research and development, with all of the manual labor kinds of functions being outsourced to places like China, because China could do it more efficiently and more cheaply, right? And so the part of the design of the global economic system is the assignment of different economic sectors of what they're going to do. And, you know, why anybody went along with this idea that you could have an economy comprised of just the high-end, high-level type jobs, you know, research and development, telecommunications, programming, healthcare, all of it designed around the idea of a global information network. How they thought that was going to work when there's only a very small percentage of the population that can actually do those jobs.
Right.
You know, so what they did is they cut off a huge percentage, the majority of our population, from being able to make a living. And that's where the idea of the universal basic income comes in, and the useless eaters, the people become useless eaters.
Right.
It's really the post-human, even, I hate even saying it because it sounds so mean and horrible, but you know, it's not my design. I'm just telling you what it is. And so, but of course they've found that really can't work. You know, you can't have the majority of your population sitting on their thumbs.
Right.
So they're trying to mitigate that in various ways. They're trying to change the education system so that the young people begin working basically in high school. They call it vocational training, but it's not home ec like when I went to school.
Right.
It's actually integrating them early into the workforce and preparing them for a lifetime of a circular kind of life where your life goes nowhere.
Right.
Going from an entry-level job to training, back to an entry-level job to retraining in a circular kind of way. I mean, it's horrible. It's just horrible what they're doing.
Right.
But that's how they will manage people that can't work in these high level fields.
Wow. It is sad. Well, you were talking about education with people used to have home ec. They learned how to do practical things. Boys had shop and they had all kinds of things where they learned practical things that they could use throughout their life or use in order to decide, okay, this is what I want to do. You had choices, and now you're implying that choices are very limited and people are geared to not make those choices but just allow whatever happens to them to happen.
Yes, yes. As a matter of fact, it was the education system that got me started looking at the systems of government, because I read a conceptual design for a national human resource management system. And I'm sure you've heard of the letter that Mark Tucker sent to Hillary Clinton, Mark Tucker being of the National Center on Economy and Education or something like that. And he had been a Carnegie person before that. But in the letter that he sent to Hillary Clinton, it was basically a conceptual design of a system that they wanted to develop. And when I read that letter about a national human resource management system, I just kind of, you know, went haywire. That's not an American system. We don't, you know, our government does not manage the labor force. So I had to research to see, are they really doing it? And I found the legislation and the everything to say that they really were doing it. And then the answer, then the question comes up, why are they doing this? What, you know, what in the world are they doing? And it's all because in a fully technological world where everything is automated, they really don't need very many people. If you think of these corporations, these huge corporations, they really have a very small staff relative to the amount of money that they make and the amount of services that they provide. Right?
Right.
And so when you're looking at at jobs that people can do, they really don't need the vast majority of the world's population. With everything automated, which is where they're headed, you know, to automate as much as possible everything that there is to automate. So what are they going to do with the people? Well, you know, from my research on the education system, I stumbled onto the redesign of our healthcare system. And the idea of a national database for medical records. And the first letter that was written by John Glenn specified that it was for medical research. So, you know, when you find a documentation and the first thing they say that they want to do this because of this reason, that's the real reason. Afterward, they covered it up. And were saying that the national database would be for efficiency and cost savings. And the idea of using it for research kind of went underground.
Right.
So in all of my research, I've considered that the National Medical Records Database was for medical research, period.
Wow.
So, which when you put that in the context of the way that they redesigned our healthcare system, with the healthcare managers and stuff, it really paints a very horrifying picture.
Yes. Yes, it does.
So, but it's everything, because we're talking about systems, integrated systems across jurisdictional boundaries, public, private, across government agencies, that's where they come up with the idea, the concept of total information awareness. And with total information awareness, you have total technocratic tyranny.
Wow.
Sorry.
Yeah, well, it just, it is amazing. And this, corporations really were designed, to handle or to direct, the population, the workforce. Corporations, hired a lot of people. And they were then able to handle labor, to control labor, which was part of the European plan that Rothschild developed. And the European plan really created both capitalism and communism. And when you look at some of the things that occurred, for instance, the so-called famine in Ireland, which wasn't a famine, it was really... It was a designed famine. The Irish produced enough to feed 18,000 people. They only had 9,000 people in their country, but the English came in and stole all of food. People often think, oh, all the Irish ever ate were potatoes. Well, there was a blight on the potatoes, but they were raising all kinds of food for enough for 18,000 people. But, okay, we'll pick this up on the other side. We'll be right back.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you.
All right, we are back with our guest today, Vicki Davis, and her websites are channelingreality.com and thetechnocratictyranny.com. And I was talking about the Irish and how, there was a deliberate starvation plan. And what that did was that it moved a lot of people out of Ireland to come over to this country and elsewhere, where they worked for corporations or factories that were just starting up, that needed labor. And I also mentioned the European plan, and this was the American system, which was a mercantile economic system that Alexander Hamilton produced, was very similar to Rothschild's European plan. And he described this plan in the Hazard Circular of July 1862, and where capital control labor by controlling wages. And that is what capitalists do. And capital or capitalist in collaboration with the government, control wages by creating corporate structures in which they employ thousands of people. And it's amazing that wartime, during war, you see a big growth in private industry that is directly related to supplying the troops, and thereafter, those industries expand as corporations. And so you find that a lot of corporations had their genesis by supplying warfare and the American system encourages and supports certain industries that are beneficial to the government's purposes.
Yeah, well, they've been using warfare. Of course, we can see what they've done in the Middle East.
Oh, yes.
Destroying their societies in order to build out the economic system which resides on the internet.
Yes.
See, they've made the economy a virtual thing. So, which goes along with the redefinition of economic value being different than the use of resources because they are planning everything out. You know, the people in this country, they think we have a capitalist system and they think, you know, it's free market and all the rest of that stuff. It's not.
No.
They've been centrally planning it for a very long time.
Right.
And I would put that going back, I think they tried to start it with Kennedy, but then they assassinated him, or somebody did, but certainly with Lyndon Johnson's Great Society.
Oh gosh. Yes. Yes. And wasn't it kind of an amazing thing that the minute that they assassinated Kennedy and then a few years later, his brother, but the war erupted or was escalated in Vietnam, wherein Kennedy was going to de-escalate. He wanted to bring the troops home, and then you had the Bay of Tonkin situation which was a false flag kind of situation, and the changes that Johnson made, particularly, well, there was immigration changes in 1965. There were the Medicare went into effect. When you think of all the things that occurred under Johnson, and even though he was very big talking about the Bay of Tonkin incident, when the Israelis attacked the USS Liberty on June 8th, 1967. He didn't say a word. In fact, he was just the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most interesting. But the Lyndon Johnson's Great Society, that they consider that David Gardner, I think his name is David Gardner, was the architect of the Great Society programs. He was a Carnegie man.
Of course. Why are we not surprised?
So, and that was when they set up the economic development districts and the Economic Development Administration, I should say. And it was through the Economic Development Administration that they changed our local communities. It was how the feds were able to buy off our local officials through
right.
a kind of a backdoor system.
Right.
And if you go to the EDA.gov website and look under resources and look at your state, and you'll be able to see the economic development groups.
Wow. All righty, we'll be right back. All righty, with our guest, and she is Vicki Davis. Her websites are channelingreality.com and thetechnocratictyranny.com, which we are really, really seeing. It is really amazing. And we were talking about Johnson and all of the things that occurred under his jurisdiction. When you go back and look at all the laws, the acceleration of war and everything else, you just have to think, wow, what happened?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I do know that the war in Vietnam was a UN war. It wasn't our war. It had nothing to do with us.
Right.
But apparently the United States took on the job of being the muscle, you know, for making all of the countries in the world conform to this global system.
Right.
And we're still doing it. That's what we're doing over in the Middle East.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, and I really wish people understood more how these systems, these technocratic systems for global governance, were going to make slaves out of everybody in the world, except the billionaires. And, you know, I think even they are vulnerable. They don't think they are, but they are.
Right.
You know, when you build a totalitarian system, even if it seems like a distributed system, it's not a distributed system. Well, it is a distributed system, but it is an interconnected system. It's all one big system,
mm-hmm.
is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
So
it has to be.
Yeah,
sure.
And if you know, it's the same concept as putting all your eggs in one basket.
Right.
No, and that's what they're doing with this global system. And the thing is that's why people are rioting all over the world, because everybody's country is, and the places where they live, it's all based in their history and their culture and their values and everything else. But the globalists have decided that we could have a one world universal system of values, which is, of course, to worship the earth, take care of the earth, and service to others, you know, service to the community. Except that there's, I don't know, maybe some people get satisfaction out of service to the community, but I kind of derive satisfaction from whatever it is that I want to do.
Right. And of course, whenever the U.S. Army or military invades, the next thing you have is the corporations coming in and stealing all the resources.
Yeah, because the military, well, the plan was ultimately to get rid of the military in its current form as of the 1990s and gradually move them into being emergency first responders globally, global emergency responders for the global emergency management system.
Wow.
And, you know, that's why they're cross-training. That's when special ops became so big, because special operators are, of course, trained in a number of different disciplines. And so it's all about getting conformity for the management of the human resources, and conformity in the infrastructure that people interact with, and making it an automated type system. I'm sure you watched those movies, Hunger Games, right?
Where, I probably did.
Well, this girl was living in one of the outer rural areas, and she was selected as kind of a gladiator type person for the amusement of the elite, basically. And if she won, she would be winning a place in the management type system. And I can really see that as a movie for social conditioning for the way that the system is going to be when they get it all in place. And that's, I think, part of the problem with people seeing this, is that you can't just look at what things are today. You have to understand that there is a long-term strategic plan that these societal planners are working towards. And I think you can see the conversion process most clearly with this COVID dialectic.
Absolutely. But there's so many people who are resisting. People are resisting all over. Of course, I haven't had my TV on for quite a while. And, but just from Twitter and, from the internet, I can see that people are resisting. But is there enough resistance? I don't see as much resistance in this country as I do elsewhere.
Yeah, I think that's really unfortunate. And, you know, I was really pretty happy where I'm living, because it was about 50-50, you know, people who were in compliance and people who were not. But over the past couple of weeks, I see that more people are wearing masks than before. The ratio is shifting.
And
I find that really disturbing.
Now, you're in Idaho?
Yeah.
Which is a very, it's an agrarian kind of a society, unless you're in Boise or some of the other big places. But up in the, what do they call the upper portion of Idaho?
Northern Idaho.
Well, I know, but there's another.
Oh, the Coeur d'Alene area?
Yeah, it's sort of agrarian, and people are more independent. At least they used to be.
Yeah, that area is kind of, it's a college town, first of all. There are several colleges there. It's near the border with Washington, and it's a tourist town also. But there are a lot of people, a lot of American patriot gun owners who moved up there, because the western states in the rural areas are some of the last areas where you can really be free, I think, in this country. But even that is coming to an end as the central planners move in and take over.
Oh, gosh.
And they have it all strategically planned. I found a Brookings Institute video. It was the title of it was On the State of Cities. And they were talking about their the plans, you know, how they would be designing cities for sustainable development. And you have to admire, on one hand, how well they did this strategic planning and how it rolls out, but horrified on the other hand at how well it rolls out.
Well, the other thing too, which is kind of similar to what you're talking about, is that they wanted, they, quote unquote, wanted more people to be living in the cities. They wanted to get people away from independent farming and moved, and they did move the economy to factory farms, which reminded me of the farms. What Stalin was attempting to do was to get, well, which caused the starvation there, the Holodomor, is collectivization of farming. And so I equate that to the very same thing as factory farms here, where you have very few independent farmers anymore.
Yes, that's right.
And that was planned, it was facilitated, and when you look back in history and look at what happened in certain years, as we were talking a few minutes ago, I was looking at my timeline to see what had happened in 1965, and I didn't really fill in 1965, but I filled in from very, very early, up until right after the war, the Second World War. And I guess I just didn't feel inclined or was busy that I didn't fill in 1965, because I wanted to see, okay, what did happen under Johnson? I take it all the way back to 1762. And but I didn't do a very good job after the war, after World War II.
Well, it was after World War, you'll have to remedy that, you have to fix that, because it was after World War II when they built all of our current day, systems, when they really began the central planning.
Okay, I'm up to, the timeline goes, up to, well, it goes up to current day, but really filling it out goes up to 1950. About 1950, and that's just kind of I just started working on some other things.
Uh-huh. Something interesting that I noticed about doing this kind of research is that there are points in time when you find where a vision was expressed, and everything that follows after that is towards the implementation of the vision.
Uh-huh.
And in 1957, there was the International Geophysical Year. And that's when there was a big global international conference of scientists. And they all decided to work on the earth sciences, to focus their work on the earth. And there were 11 different, specialties that they would all work on. And it was, I believe, from that conference that they figured out, when all the results were in, of course, that's when they made the decision that resources are finite. And once they decided that resources were finite, I forgot to mention, it was also the beginning of the technological era. That was when they were working on rockets and, you know, the satellites. They had put up satellites and that sort of thing. So there were two things that happened. They decided to focus on the earth sciences, and it was the beginning of the technological era. And, of course, computer systems were being developed. They'd started to really developing those in a serious way during World War II.
Oh.
And it was after that, in the early 60s, when they started looking towards the future and trying to project out what's the future going to be given these two factors. We have finite resources and we have technology. And the futurists, which I'm sure you're familiar with the futurists, Buckminster Fuller was one, and I have a whole list of them. But anyway, I think those were the two parameters that they were working under for projecting out how the future might be given these two factors.
Hmm.
And so things kind of progressed from there. You know, and of course Rockefeller with the Club of Rome.
Right.
And MIT was involved in that, you know, coming up with the data for the limits to growth. And see, I always thought they didn't have the data to be able to do the kind of analysis that they said they did to determine that there would be shortages of resources. But I was unaware of this 1957 conference when the scientists all got together to study the Earth.
What scientists were these? Were these
they had a name. It was the International Scientific something or other. I have it here.
Who financed it?
That's a good question. I don't know.
That would be something to figure out. oh gosh. Amazing things. When I was working on my timeline, I thought, gosh, I'm doing this as a kind of an independent kind of a thing. And I thought, probably nobody's ever going to look at this except me. But now I'm wishing that I had gone further on it to fill in things more, even if just for myself, because so many things have happened since World War II that are so imperative to what we're talking about. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. And we're going to take phone calls in the next hour. I'm sure you've got a lot of questions. Be right back. Our guest today is Vicki Davis. Her websites are channelingreality.com and thetechnocratictyranny.com. And we were discussing a great many things, particularly what happened after certain periods of time. And somebody in the chat room said, American soldier boys, including U.S. military's top brass, serve one all-important function, excuse me, to make the world safe for democracy. And democracy today has simply become a euphemism for, I'm going to leave a word out, a technological hegemony.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty accurate.
But I did leave a word out.
Yeah, I can guess what that word is. I've used it myself.
Yes,
in relation to all of this stuff that
yes, I got in trouble just recently on Twitter. It's kind of an amazing thing that if you say something that offends somebody else, the attack dogs, the hate. Oh my gosh, I got so many hate Twitters, because I posted one thing. And my gosh, what these people did was just prove that I was right, actually, because all the hate and the vile names and the threats, threats of turning me in, threats of having me arrested. Well, I'm not in the right country that you can arrest me yet.
Yeah, I've had a few of those threats, you know, to have me arrested for saying things that are not against the law.
Yet.
But, you know, from the country that they're in, they apparently can have that done.
Right. I got to stay out of the UK.
Yeah. They're trying to change our attitudes and beliefs to adopt this, to adopt the social model of life in the U.S. I guess it's community or something like that.
Communitarianism?
Yeah.
Which community, sort of,
Or just a belief in community. And the elimination of individual rights.
Right. Oh, right. Let's all get together as a group. Right. Forget you're an individual with individual thoughts. You have to think like the rest of the members of the community or else.
Yeah, it's the community opinion that matters. And you have to conform to the community opinion. Of course, you know, who's the community? If I were picking a community, I wouldn't have those people in my community for sure.
Right.
So, but, you know, with this global system and with what they're doing to our country, the idea is to get rid of the individual as
right.
an entity.
Oh, and that word, the word that I was thinking, it doesn't start with F. Okay, we're at the top of the hour. We'll be right back after a break.
Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Our guest today is Vicki Davis. Her websites are channelingreality.com and thetechnocratictyranny.com. You know, I got up at 5 o'clock this morning, and I meditated for an hour and then did a bunch of energy medicine kinds of things. Then I went to a class, the opening introduction for class 6 for energy medicine. And that got over at a half hour before the radio program started. And so I feel like I put in a pretty good day's work here. So anyway.
Sounds like it.
Yes, it's been a very interesting day. And I bring up energy medicine, as opposed to, what the government and the medical system is trying to foist onto us, where and everybody has an immune system, and that immune system is to protect us from germs and viruses if you believe in the germ theory. So there's just so many avenues that one could take, but when I and The introduction today was via Zoom, and we talked a bit about masks and why we had to do a lot of things via Zoom. And I'm thinking, this group of people that I'm interacting with, there was like 60 of us, and I'm thinking, we're the last people in the United States that should be thinking about masks. And yet, because of the situation, we usually have these in person. I've been in energy medicine for about a year and a half, and our first four classes were in person because there was no problem. Class five was done via Zoom, and it just makes a really big difference because the hotels that we would usually meet at were they're licensed. They have policies. You have to be 6 feet apart. You have to wear a mask. And so it just is very sad. It's just really sad. We do have some callers. Do you want to take some calls or do you want to,
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah, we can take some calls.
Okay. Who have we got? Okay. We have Charles in Florida. Charles, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Deanna. I've been wondering about when the technocrat tyranny would come as for different with from socialism or communism, would take over since at least 1969. A friend of mine back then that was very much interested in the occult showed me, article in Kiplinger, in the Kiplinger magazine. I don't know if that exists anymore, but
yeah,
it was all for.
I used to take it, but I don't know whether it's still in existence.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the issues from the year 1969, it talked about, and it was all for a technocratic system. It said most of the middle and small sized businesses would go out of business. It talked about computers everywhere. This was in 1969 already.
Wow.
And people would be, many professions would be, unnecessary anymore. They would be,
obsolete.
Yeah, obsolete. Yeah, obsolete. That's the correct word. And another work is, the technocratic terms, like a credit card is an energy certificate. Middle and sized business are called marginals. They're supposed to be gotten rid of. They're useless. Only the people in the technocratic system everything will be automated, you know. That was already talked about in 1969, but have you ever read God and Golem by Norbert Wiener? It was written in 1948, I think, originally. It was, they hadn't coined the word, cyborg. One of my friends, said he knew the, son of, the guy that coined the word cyborg. That's cybernetic organism. That became very current in science fiction literature probably after the late 40s. The idea of the two, Korea and Vietnam being created in after World War II is Fletcher Prouty. He was on Tom Valentine's show in the 1990s. He was already talking about, he was an advisor to the director of the JFK movie about the Kennedy assassination. I don't know if you ever saw that, where one of the characters plays, the guy I was just talking about, Fletcher Prouty, yeah. But Fletcher Prouty said in 1945 he could see they were preparing for both Korean and Vietnam War in 1945 when he was flying to the presidents to Yalta. So,
well, yeah, we left a lot of the warfare implementation over there in that area because they knew that they were going to be using it again.
Yeah. And what did they do in those wars? They zoned off. They divided those countries.
Right.
So Korea. You had one side, like Korea, then North Korea was under China's purview. And then
did you ever see the book, on Vietnam that the Burt Society used to put out? It was called, Background to Betrayal by Hilaire Duberrier. He was an American writer from South Dakota, but he traveled all the world. He said it went back into the 50s. It was a CFR Bilderberger thing. He just decided to create the whole thing. And even when France was already in control after World War II of Vietnam, the French had actually won the Indochina War, but America wanted them to lose so they could go in there and play little games, you know. The idea of the Green Berets drove all the Vietnamese peasants out, drive them out of their villages where their sacred gods lived and drive them into strategic hamlets, which alienated them against the United States. But typical stupidity, well, deliberately planned stupidity. I'm sure they deliberately did that to drive them in the arms of the Viet Cong, North Vietnamese.
I'm absolutely certain of it. That seems to be the model that's used over and over and over again.
The America is the gendarme of the world, but it's been wars that there are no win wars repeatedly. Father Coughlin back in the 30s predicted the United States would become the world gendarme after World War II. He was able to predict that, you know, the radio preacher in the 1930s. Many people used to listen to him. And
what was his name? It started with a C.
Father Coughlin. Coughlin.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, he is supposed to predict.
I think they don't want to use our manpower to ultimately control countries, but they do want to control the leaders of countries. So they get them to, quote, voluntarily go along with the global system.
Right, or they would withhold financial aid.
Yeah, or worst case, they will murder you. So.
Right.
You know where the round table and all that, the Rhodes Milner group started in Oxford? That started with John Ruskin, who was a Pre-Raphaelite, a writer on the Pre-Raphaelite. He was part of the Pre-Raphaelite artistic movement. And one of his friends was Alice, and, you know, who was a model for Alice in Wonderland. Her tutor, Alice, at Oxford, her father was a famous teacher there. And, her tutor was, John Ruskin.
Wow.
You know, who headed this group. They already were talking about a United Nations back then.
Right.
But it was supposed to be located in Israel for you know who to rule the world. This was in Controversy of Zion by Douglas Reed.
which is a very good read.
but the United Nations came first, actually, before the League of Nations.
The United Nations
started in 1942 again as part of the group of the Allied group called itself, and then it evolved in San Francisco into a world body. After 1942 is what the Allied powers call themselves.
Yes.
1942 onward. Well, we were the United Nations from 1942 to 1945. The Britain and the United States and all the so-called allies against the Axis powers. All planned. I think some of these people like Aldous Huxley Aldous Huxley and George Orwell were both in the technocratic movement too, I've read too. some of the ideas in Orwell, a three-part world government, Oceania, East Asia, and that's a technocrat, synarchist idea from Europe during World War II. They had a three-part program. So Orwell's following the technocratic model there. He supposedly was in it.
You don't really need computer systems to think in a systems mode. You know, it's just a way of thinking, a way of organizing and building organizations. And so these guys who started this, they wanted to organize the world into a world system of tyranny. They may have deluded themselves into thinking that they were building a system where there would be peace forever. But the only way you can enforce peace is through violence. So,
wow, what a concept.
I think the system of the technocrats started is modeled on the French system of the École Polytechnique. The polytechnicians are almost like a secret society, and some historians of the technocrat movement, like the rise of the book The Rise of the Technocrats, say it goes back to Grand Orient Freemasonry, but the polytechnicians were set up by the followers of Napoleon. So it's a system, polytechnician system, and secret societies is a technocratic system. And I think it evolved out of that idea. It's not socialist or communist. It's.
Did you have a question for Vicki?
No, I just, my commentaries. No, I can't think of anything. Yeah. Thank you very much.
You've added a lot to the conversation.
Okay.
So thank you very much for
thank you very much.
Okay, have a great day. Evening. Okay, we have Pat in Fort Worth. Pat?
Hello. I've noticed a lot of things going on now that kind of make them help their plan. And one of them is, in Fort Worth, you can't buy a rat killer. Hardly at all. And so then the rats take over and they bring disease, right?
Right. Well, you know what I've noticed is that they've changed glues so that, it seems like they've been stepping down adhesives. So you have water-based glues, which, of course, you know, anything water-based over time, it's going to come up, right?
Right, especially in certain climates.
Right, and things like traffic slowing mechanisms. They bank the curve wrong, and so you have a lot of accidents. Well, that calms traffic, doesn't it?
It's really weird, and I don't know if they're on something, if they're smoking something. I wonder, you know, all the time, they say, oh, those pots fake. Well, I remember a guy on pot who crashed his big old barge right into the pier. So I don't, you know, so you don't know who's on something. And then they have to get rid of airplane glue for model airplanes because kids sniffed it. I don't know. Maybe the best thing to do is just let everybody who's going to do that and go kill themselves.
That's a way of population reduction, right? If you make products that don't work, then
just don't give them an annual income. Or, you know, like you people been talking about, you know, that if that's the way they don't need to go to work. They can just probably take their stimulus money and go buy drugs.
Right. Which will kill off a lot of our young people. Which has been killing off a lot of our young people.
It really has.
Yeah.
And then
that's a way to get rid of population without one of those messy wars.
Right.
Right. But you don't really know who's on it, you know, and you don't know who's worth trying to keep, really, because I've had them tell me, you know, it's just really hard to get off. Well, it's so, I can't get off of smoking. Well, you always do when you go to the hospital with lung cancer. You can't sit up there and smoke in your bed.
Well, the other thing, too, with this lockdown, this house arrest kind of situation, is that there's a lot of domestic violence. There's a lot of suicides because people feel incredibly hopeless. A lot of people live from paycheck to paycheck, and all of a sudden the paycheck is gone, and what they're getting from the government does not compensate for the loss of a paycheck. And so there's a lot of domestic abuse, suicides, anxiety, child abuse. It's pretty terrible from what I understand.
I can see how it would be. Plus, you know, the procedures that people didn't get, the so-called, you know, preventative maintenance kinds of things, you know, the mammogram or the colonoscopy or, you know, whatever, all these kinds of things that are not being done, you know, maybe the cataract surgery that are not being done because they're not considered emergency.
I'm not on the side of medicine. That's what caused this whole problem here. See, if we take vitamins, if we take vitamins and we live longer, medicine's going to take credit for it. But it's just greed. Greed.
This colonoscopy issue is very interesting because you have to understand that they do not clean that camera and the brushes after each patient. So when you have a colonoscopy,
well, I've never had one, and I will.
Don't ever do it.
Well, I think we're learning, and the reason I believe it is because it's hard to buy vitamins in some places right now.
That's because all of our medicines are made in China.
Pat, thank you for your phone call. We're going to go to a quick break. We'll be right back.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
Vicki Davis, her websites are channelingreality.com and thetechnocratictyranny.com. We're talking about colonoscopies. Their optical, their camera, cannot be cleaned between patients. All they do is dip it into a bucket of water. They don't put
disgusting.
They don't put any sterilization on it because it's a very sensitive optical camera. So do not sign up to get one because whatever the last people had, you just might get.
That is just disgusting. That is horrible. I'm not fond of the medical establishment, so I try to avoid them. I don't go for all of this preventative stuff. I've got to really be hurting for me to go see a doctor.
I have to be half dead before I will. Yes, I totally agree with you. There are times when when you may need to, if you're in a terrible traffic accident, have to be patched back together. But for the most part, and mammographies, why a man must have made that one up. Do you think that they would subject their private parts to
a private middle part in a vice?
Exactly.
Squeeze.
Exactly. You think that would be a cool idea? I don't think so.
There have been a few guys I'd like to do that too.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Let's see. Should we take another call here?
Okay, yeah, sure.
Okay, let's take Tom in Utah. Tom, welcome to the program.
Hi there, Zaidisa. I want to give you a little glimmer of light in the darkness, the morose darkness that people are perceiving now. In 1959, I was recruited by the, of all people, the RAND Corporation, because I was a Mensa candidate. And, you know, in pride, I accepted their opportunities to help pay for my education in pathology or medicine. But I've got to tell you this. Over the years or the decades of my experience in this field, I've had the opportunity to work for, to work with, and to work upon these elitists who seem to think that they are something special. I'm going to tell you a little secret. In the morgue, I never found any of them to be a cyborg. They're all flesh, blood, tissue, fat, vulnerable, and they smell as bad as the poorest man at the point of their demise. There is nothing special about them, and quite frankly, they have another flaw. Well, several other flaws. Most of them are perverts. They have way too much free time on their hands, and they respond to oxytocin rather than endorphin. The other thing is there is no honor among thieves, and you can see that with the behavior of these elitists right now, like, oh, well, Biden, Obama, Clinton, and that other guy that they weaseled out of position. So the light at the depth of this tunnel of darkness is they are vulnerable. By the way, nature has its limits. It also controls the sun, and the sun can interfere with all of their intent to control the world by wire or by wave. Anyway, that's my hope. And the creator of the universe didn't give them any special authority or power that you don't already have yourself. So we need to be conscious of our creation, respect the creator, and realize that, quite frankly, he and nature have absolute control, and these people only conjure their control. And their numbers are small, and our numbers are large. The only problem is we need to get back into the genesis of our creation and exercise the power that was given to us by the Creator.
I think
that's my light at the end of this tunnel.
Really good, really good advice.
Yes, I wish he could zap them with some sort of a bolt of electricity or something.
A solar storm did a rather curious burning of telegraph wires, you know, within the last century. And no matter how sophisticated your electronics are, one jolt from the sun will wipe it all out. Their control will disappear, and you'll be a sovereign entity on the land. If their 5G gets zapped.
Oh, 5G. We need to talk about that. Okay, we'll be right back after a break.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead. To change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me. Have to teach the children about living with each other.
Yoo-hoo! That's okay. Alrighty. Sorry about that. Do we still have Tom on or no? Yes?
Hello?
Is Tom still there?
Hello, I'm still here.
Oh, okay.
Hello.
we do have some other callers, but if you'd like to complete your thoughts, that'd be great.
Are you talking to me, Deanna?
Yes, yes. Uh-huh.
Oh, I thought the phone wasn't reacting. Well, I'd really love your guest to give me the honor of having her call me, and I can take her through a lot of the experience that I have, which gives me hope. But, of course, we have, you know what's really sad, Deanna? These evil people have spent so much energy acquiring their wealth. And instead of doing that, they should have been providing the truth in science, and I'm talking about the truth in science, then you and I and the people of this world would have the right tools, we would make the right choices, and this earth would sustain 10 times the load it has right now, and we would be living in purity. We have to get back to the original plan of our Creator, or even nature. If nobody believes in God, I don't care. Nature and God have the same will. We just need to understand it and conform to it.
Okay, Vicki, your thoughts.
Yeah, they did separate themselves from us as if they are a special population, a unique population. And everything that they do, there is a duality to it. And truth doesn't matter. The truth, they have forsaken truth for power. And you can't have a functioning society, a functioning world without truth.
Absolutely.
So I'm hopeful that you're right, that it will all collapse of its own evil.
I've seen that happening among my peers. Their ego, their immorality is such that they collapse or they become their own worst enemy.
Right. Okay, Tom,
anyway,
we're going to cut you loose. And
thank you.
Thank you so much for your phone call.
Yep.
We had an email with a link, and the email talked about the global cities. And the name of the article is Global Cities Elite Chicago Program Masks a Planned Undercutting of the Nation State. And Amy Liu of the Brookings Institute says, I would say that the problem isn't so much globalization, but the failure of our public policies to help people and to help communities adjust to the New World Order. And this is really, really something. Mark Anderson is the one that that put this together, and he's the truth hound, a terrific investigator. I've met him. Your thoughts on that, Vicki?
I'm not sure what kind of adjustment she thinks that they can do. You know, market the stack and pack high rises to us and tell us how really wonderful it will be to have an apartment. How great it is to go to a city park with about, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 other people.
Right.
You know, I don't know what kind of marketing she thinks that they could do to make the idea of the fiefdom, which is what they're really talking about, the cities as principalities, a more attractive concept.
Right.
Brookings, by the way, is one of the principal promoters of the idea of metropolis. They had a metropolis project.
Mm.
And it was Brookings that sponsored that conference that I was telling you about, where they came up with the plan for the museums and the theaters and the hospitals as the anchor institutions of the cities. Oh, and the universities, include them in there, as the anchor institutions of the cities to be like the change agents of the community to move to the global system.
Wow.
And I have that on my website. It's called City-State Conversion.
Wow.
And people can go read about that and where the idea started and how they're implementing that.
Wow. All right, we have another caller. He's been on the line. I'm so sorry to have him wait. James in Vancouver. James?
Yes, hello?
Yes, hello. How are you?
Okay. I had a question for your guest. In the 1957 science conference she was talking about, was she perhaps referring to the Pugwash conference?
Is it called Pugwash? I've heard the term Pugwash. But
anyway,
Go ahead.
That conference was financed by Cyrus Eden.
And who was he?
Who was he? He was a buddy of Rockefeller, and he was a financier in the United States. He founded the company Republic Steel in 1929 and did a lot of that kind of thing as a financier. I wondered if you've ever heard the book What is Life by Erwin Schrödinger. Have you heard about that book?
I haven't.
Okay, well, it's not a very long read. I think it's about 100 pages. In the book, Schrödinger shared the 1933 Nobel Prize with Paul Dirac for quantum mechanics, and in the book, he says that the Earth has a million years worth of resources on it.
Wow.
We have a million years of resources on our Earth here. I apologize for that screaming. Somebody's screaming out in the backyard there. So there is no shortages. There are no problems. The ultimate agenda of these oligarchs, I'll just call them oligarchs, is simply control, okay? And for them, scientists are a dime a dozen, okay?
Well, we know that you can buy a scientist.
Sorry?
We know that you can buy a scientist.
Yeah, as many as you want.
They control the media. So they control what people hear.
Sure.
And everyone is wearing their mask. And everyone is going to take their vaccine. See? Because this is a big idea they got, and they're in control.
Yeah. And you know what? If you apply logic to it, what are people doing by wearing those masks? They're not even therapeutic. They're not even medically therapeutic. You can buy a mask at the dollar store and that suffices. So the whole thing is just stupid. They have people breathing their own carbon dioxide.
Yes.
And I saw a woman, I'm sure she was suffering from
hypoxia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, her face was all red and she was sweating, and I felt so bad for her, but you know, she was terrified, I guess, to be without the mask.
Wow.
I could mention one other reference. Have you ever read anything by the author Kenneth N. Waltz, Theory of International Politics?
No, I haven't, huh?
He also wrote the book, Man, the State, and War. Anyway, in his book, Theory of International Politics, on one particular page, I even remember the page number, it's page 111, he said the ultimate goal of every system is the preservation of that system, whether it's the Central Intelligence Agency, the FBI, or any kind of system, the ultimate goal is for their preservation. See? The individual doesn't count. See? And so that's
available as a PDF online for free.
Sorry?
The book that you, The Theory of International Politics, is available online as a PDF. I'm going to post the link in my chat room.
Yes, I would say
that's probably true. And for the system to grow, systems always grow. It's like a cancer. Yes. Once a system started, it continues to grow and to consume all processes around it.
Right. Anyway, thank you for taking my call, and your network, again, is very effective in getting these kinds of things out. And the best way to defend against all of this tyranny is for people to be informed. So thank you once again.
Thank you so much. Take care. Okay, we have Wayne in Texas. Wayne?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah, hi, Deanna. Great discussion today.
We have a great guest. Yes, uh-huh.
Sure thing. I have a question for Vicki, but I did want to make a comment on these cities. And I think the plan seems to be pretty clear, which means they're all pushing to defund and really demoralize police forces, allow this rioting to, you know, ruin whole city blocks and everything, so you have a perpetual chaos. And I think there's no doubt in my mind, a very near future, probably after the election, we're going to see some of these cities start to call for UN oversight in their little area, which will mean administrators and troops coming in. And that's my comment anyway. I don't know if that rings a bell with either of you.
Well, I would say, yeah, you're probably right about that. They might call for the UN to come in, but then they have to contend with the rest of us. And I consider anybody wearing a blue helmet is the enemy.
On domestic territory. Yeah. Well, and again, I think you're going to have a lot of company, but it just seems like that's going to be the foot in the door, and there's going to be some real issues over that. But my real reason for calling was, again, with the information you're giving out, which is wonderful. I'm wondering, when I hear this stuff, I think about what could be a possible remedy for us, the people. And number one, I'm wondering if you have come in contact with some pretty smart legal types that are considering options that they could put out there or maybe mention to you that could be workable as this thing unfolds. And I'm kind of talking about trying to figure out what kind of tricks they're going to use to contract us into this forced vaccination or something like that, because we are dealing with the administrative state, and they do use a variety of techniques to have us unwittingly contract with them. So I was kind of wondering if you've ventured down that path at all.
Well, I do know that there are lawsuits all over the country, and even if a lawsuit hasn't been filed, there are lawyers that are working on lawsuits. I think what has to happen, and maybe this COVID thing is a good thing in one way at least, and that way is to wake people up, for them to realize that they are making permanent changes. They plan on making permanent changes to our form of government. And I'm hopeful that once the lawyers realize that, that there will be more lawyers filing more lawsuits. And if the Supreme Court is true to their oath of office, then they will be evaluating these lawsuits on the basis that they should, which is against the Constitution, and finding in favor of the Constitution. And if they don't do that, then we're sunk.
I see. Well, again, my response to that is I hope there's good lawyers out there that will do this, but as you know, that when you hire a lawyer, you're deemed mentally incompetent, and I feel like they may help in some cases, but I wouldn't really depend on that. But have you ever considered, or people you talk to, the fact that we do have two types of citizenship. One's a U.S. citizen, which is more of a corporate citizen. The other one's a state citizen. And I'm just kind of wondering if maybe these vaccines will be applicable only to U.S. citizens, which are the under the auspices of the District of Columbia, or if there's a way to contract out of that system and maintain a state citizen status. Could be the Republic of Texas.
I don't think it will matter because the state governments have been co-opted also. And the proof is in the fact of the real ID. See, what they need for a national system of medical records and ultimately for a global system of medical records is an absolutely foolproof, unique ID for everybody. And I really think that the vaccination record is one method that they are using to, if you don't already have an electronic medical record, that's one way to start it. And of course that starts with children and their vaccinations. So, they need to have everybody have an absolute unique ID. And none of our national identification numbers will do it because they're all corrupted. You know, the Social Security number is, it's just a mess.
Right.
So that won't work. And if you're talking about an ID for medical services, you can't make a mistake between John Brown number one and John Brown number 5,976.
Right.
You got to make sure you have the right one.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. All righty. We will be back shortly. I just want to emphasize Vicki's websites, particularly the Technocratic Tyranny.com. Please, if you do nothing else over the rest of the week, look at that website, read the articles, look at what she has discovered and shared. It's totally amazing.
I've tried to organize a little bit better on this website, on the new website, than I had in the old website. But the problem with the way that I've done this, I never set out actually to do research on the global system because I didn't even know there was a global system. Okay, so everything that I've learned has been one step at a time from the bottom up. So when I compile things together, I try to put it from the top down so that, you know, people can read things in a logical order because my research hasn't been in a logical order. I just follow the ideas or concepts that is of interest at the moment.
Sure.
So.
But you've put it together so well, and even if you didn't plan on this, you've just done an excellent job. We do have one last caller, but I don't think that we have time to take them unless he just says, but it's somebody from Idaho.
Oh, okay.
Casey in Idaho. Casey?
Oh, quick, yeah, quick. Casey.
Yeah. Yeah, hi, Spangola. Hi, Vicki. How are you?
Hi.
I heard somebody, I didn't want to take away from what Vicki's contributed to the show. I just heard somebody, you know, say, you know, kind of what can we do? And I'm part of a group called People's Rights, and I can provide that information if you're interested. Is that okay if I provide the website?
Please.
Go ahead.
It's basically an outlet for people to connect with their neighbor. If you go to peoplesrights.org, you can find out more information and join our group. We're receiving backlash right now from the SPLC, the Montana Human Rights Group. the Oregonian Live is targeting our group basically because we're being extremely effective. We have over 27,000 people signed up nationally. It's a national movement. So I just wanted to kind of throw it in at the end for people to check out that website.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Casey.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, thank you, ladies. Okay. Thanks for the show.
Thank you. Well, that was good.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in Northern Idaho. Casey's from Northern Idaho. And the, as he said, the left has really targeted the area that he's in.
Sure.
And there is an organization called Western States Center that is one of these Marxist groups. And they are of course connected to SPL, Southern Poverty Law Center.
Right.
And so.
Well, bless your heart for all of your efforts and your work. We need to do this again real soon.
Yeah, it's been fun. I've enjoyed it very much.
I have also. We just, the time went by really fast.
Yeah.
Thank you, my dear.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me.
All righty. Take care. Bye-bye, listeners. Talk with you next week. Take care.